ACT Radio is taped and produced at the KTEP studios at the University of Texas at El Paso. The views and opinions expressed on ACT Radio are solely those of its participants and do not necessarily reflect those of KTEP, its staff, or management.
Welcome to Animal Concerns of Texas, ACT Radio. I'm Greg Lawson. Here on ACT, we discuss how we humans relate to other animals, how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to those practices. We also discuss why a plant-based diet is not only best for human health, but also the best thing you can do for the environment. So if you're concerned about the environment, if you're concerned about your health, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas. Coming up on today's show, I have a conversation with Josephine Bellacomo, author of the book Move the Message. That's coming up a little later, but first, there's some news I'd like to share with you. This fall, the wolves of Washington State's Wedge Pack were senselessly killed. News was just released that the State Fish and Wildlife Department of Washington spent nearly $77,000 to kill the seven pack members. According to the newly released report, it cost taxpayers nearly $55,000 to kill just one wolf in a 39-day ground hunt. The other six wolves were killed in a four-day period in September using a helicopter and a marksman that cost $22,000. Surely these kinds of costs can't be justified, even by those who view cows only as commodities and wolves as mere pests. Washington State Senator Kevin Ranker has criticized the decision to kill the Wedge Pack and is planning a legislative hearing next year. It might be a good time to ask Washington State how much they're willing to spend to keep welfare ranchers in business, and how many wolves will have to die before the grazing of cattle on our national forests is finally a thing of the past. In a related story, over a dozen Wisconsin hunters have joined animal rights groups in a lawsuit that seeks to permanently ban the use of dogs by wolf hunters. Dane County Circuit Judge Peter Anderson has temporarily banned dogs that help hunters track down wolves, and he'll hold a hearing next month to consider a permanent ban. But it could all be a moot point by then, at least for this season. The Department of Natural Resources of Wisconsin says that 73 wolves have already been shot since the hunt began in mid-October, and at the current pace, hunters will reach their quota of 116 wolves before the December 20th court hearing. Wolves were almost completely wiped out in the United States by the middle of the last century, and then they were reintroduced in Yellowstone National Park in the 1990s, and some wolves migrated from Canada to the northern states. Wolves are an important part of forest ecosystems, and we shouldn't be killing them to protect the interest of cattle ranchers. Instead, we should treasure their presence. Stay with us. Coming up next, we'll have a conversation with activist Josephine Bellacomo, who has 16 years' experience as a corporate trainer and communications coach. Her clients have included Microsoft, J.P. Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, the American Heart Association, and many others. She's the author of the book Move the Message, Your Guide to Making a Difference and Changing the World. That's coming up next on ACT Radio. Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas is Josephine Bellacomo. Jo, thanks for being with me on the show today.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Sure. We'd like to start out by asking our guests how they got involved in animal advocacy in the first place. So what triggered you?
Well, I had already become I was an activist what we might call an armchair activist working with Amnesty International. And at that time, this is, close to 20 years ago, we would print up letters and send them to heads of state internationally.
Uh-huh.
So I was already involved in social justice, but it wasn't until I was actually PETA, some of their information that really inspired me in such a way, I felt like I had many sleepless nights, you know, the things that keep us up at night,
yeah.
The things that fuel the fire for us.
Uh-huh.
And I knew that I just couldn't be silent, and I had to take another action, another way of being. And that was when I believed that I first truly became an activist, meaning I stood on a street in Manhattan and I held a placard,
uh-huh.
and I protested fur. And Cesar Chavez says that once you do take that action, you are forever changed. And I think that was the beginning. And in my professional life, I was already a communications coach, an executive coach, working with very high-powered individuals, CEOs, and helping them to communicate better. And what I was seeing is these wonderful people who were joining me on the street, these activists who had so much passion, also were not necessarily communicating.
Right.
In ways that were very compelling to people who have a lot of power. So I began to create workshops for activists where I could teach us not only how to communicate better, but how to communicate in ways that powerful people like to get information and how they like to give information. So it was a different way of structuring our messages and delivering our messages.
True. We have to target our audience. So many activists are just so angry and so in your face, and the power holders don't want to see that. They want to be a part of change for the better, too. So how do we reach out to the power holders? What's an effective method for creating change?
We need to recognize that everyone has power. So let's first take a moment and think and be very clear about who we're talking about when we're saying power holders is those who hold the power to make change happen as quickly as possible. So that might be heads of organizations or heads of departments. It could be legislative officials,
mm-hmm.
people who can initiate legislation. And if we can appeal to them in a way that's meaningful to them, if we can embrace their values and speak to what drives their decisions, we're going to have much more success.
Obviously, a lot of them are driven by money, and it's hard to make any change in that. For example, to get chicken producers to treat their hens more humanely, and it costs them money.
Yes, but they also have drivers in their decisions that they need for consumers to believe that their product is safe.
Right.
So they have to think about the marketing as well as the revenue that's being produced.
So they come up with funny labels like humanely raised, free range, and they fool the public into believing that they're choosing a safe and humane product.
Yes, they do shift because they recognize that consumers do care about animals. You know, every single state in our union, all 50 states, have anti-cruelty statutes. So consumers do care about animals, and it's that caring that shifts the approach of those who are exploiting animals. So as you just described, one way in which they are responding to the public is a marketing effort.
Uh-huh.
But it's only so good as people believe that marketing effort. The more that we expose that
right.
this is inaccurate, that this is false advertising, then consumers push to have, for example, legislation that can protect consumers better. I live in California now, and we just had a proposition on the ballot, Prop 37, which would require that all products that are genetically modified be labeled as genetically modified.
Did that pass?
Unfortunately, it didn't pass.
No, it didn't pass. Yeah.
No, and it was heavily backed by Monsanto.
Right.
No surprise there of the power behind that initiative, which caused it to fail. But to go back to the question is how we can appeal to power holders is to recognize that it's not always just money, that they may be driven by their own sense of justice, their own sense of freedom. For example, freedom of enterprise. Whereas we may be thinking of freedom also, we're thinking about freedom for the animals, and we're thinking about social justice issues in terms of the workers.
Uh-huh.
So if we can appeal to something that's personal and motivating to them, then we can have dialogue, then we can work to collaborate. An example of that that's relevant within the past year is the Occupy movement.
Uh-huh.
And there was strong support for Occupy toward the beginning. And I tell you, Greg, we could talk long on what may have caused the movement to collapse in ways in terms of the public favor. A lot of that has to do with not having a single message or clear leadership.
Right.
But at the beginning, if the activists had more focus on personal responsibility, they could have made a stronger connection to those on Wall Street, because Wall Street advocates for personal responsibility. For example, with the collapse of the mortgage industry, the accusations were that, well, people who were getting a mortgage should have done their own due diligence, and they shouldn't have gotten a mortgage if they couldn't afford it.
Right.
We could argue that those who were approving the mortgages didn't do their, you know, their personal responsibility for ensuring that mortgages could be paid. So it seems like it's a bit of a tangent, but the point that I mean to make is when you find something that's core, such as personal responsibility or justice or fairness,
uh-huh.
truth, education, safety, those are ways of being able to connect with those who have power.
Something else about power that I seldom recognize is that we all, as consumers, have the power to change the corporate structure. And I think it's up to us as activists to awaken that power in consumers.
I agree. We are so powerful. When you think about the way that the world is, it's because people have envisioned it to be so.
Hmm.
We are powerful. We create the world as it is. That is for all the good that's in the world and for all that we want to change. And so we can create another world, and we do it through our ideas. We do it by the way that we envision something, the way that we want it to be, and the way that we communicate that, the way that we move our message. That helps others to envision it, and it also helps others to be inspired so that they can work toward that vision. So I agree with you. We are so powerful, and sometimes, especially now having had Thanksgiving, people can feel very disempowered that the atrocities against animals are so huge. But we have to recognize that everything that we do, every meal that we have, every way in which we sustain ourselves in which we're not using animals, that is so powerful.
Something you say in your book, Move the Message, that I found most intriguing is that we are the message, and we have a responsibility. You've probably read Nick Cooney's Change of Heart. He says that we should cut our hair and put on a suit, and I tend to agree with him, and we have to look like we're mainstream to get the message accepted by other members of the mainstream. At least that's my point of view. Do you agree with that?
I do, and I also want to compassionately take into account why it's so hard for people who want to change the world to actually do that.
Okay, good.
So let me take it from the perspective of marketing and just understanding how people are persuaded. And there's three key reasons why people will buy a product or a service or buy into an idea. And as activists, we have to recognize that we're selling an idea.
Okay.
We're selling a vision. So one of the ways is if we look as if we should be, again, if I can use the word selling, we look as if we should be selling this idea. We look as if we are happy. We look as if we've got it together. We
mm-hmm.
look as if we are
successful,
making things happen.
Right.
And Russell Simmons is a gorgeous example of that. He is vibrant. He's healthy. He uses his advocacy in powerful ways. He uses his connections in ways that are so transformative to the world. The second way is if we look the way that people aspire to be like. And you talk about gorgeous examples. How about Kathy Freston, the veganist? And who looks at her and doesn't want to be like her. She is glowing. She's articulate, and she's also very beautiful. So that makes a lot of sense to us as consumers, you know, people who look as if they should be selling the product and people who we aspire to be like.
Uh-huh.
And the third way in which people are persuaded is they have the experience of us as if we are like them. So when Nick Cooney talks about changing our appearance so that we are more mainstream, it's true in that we look more like our audience, but we have to recognize, why is it hard for some of us to cover up our tats or
yeah.
remove the ball bearings from our face? And some of that has to do with identity politics. You know, we have to recognize a lot of people are in a movement because they personally have experienced injustice, and part of who they need to be in the world in order to change the world is to appear a certain way. And so it's not so much that I advocate people have to cover up their tats and remove the ball bearings and cut their hair in order to be mainstream, because even I, as a corporate professional working with very powerful people, sometimes I wear a suit, and when I'm on my way to the yoga studio, I'm wearing yoga pants.
Uh-huh.
So I have to believe that even when, if I were to run into a client, and I'm speaking to a client, yeah, believe me, trust me on this, Greg, yoga pants is not my best look. But I still am who I am. I still hold that person in my presence with my eyes. My eyes meet that person's eyes, and I speak the way that person speaks. So even if at that moment you're not looking the way that your audience is looking, meaning the person whom you want to make that connection with, if you have respect, if you're coming from a place of connection and respect for that individual,
uh-huh.
if you have compassion for the fact that they are different, you're going to communicate in ways that are more like that person. You'll speak the way that person speaks, meaning you may slow down your speaking pace, or you may get more excited, or you may calm it down. And you'll hold them with your eyes in such a way that they can truly see who you are. They can see that you're a person who is genuine. You're a person who is speaking from your heart and from your conviction. And that will give the person you're speaking to the experience of, you are like me. I see myself in you. And I think that's what we need to strive for. We need to open our heart to other parts and be willing to have that connection.
That's true. Anger gets us no place, really. You know, I have been angry in the past. We were fortunate enough to have Matt Ball here with his lovely wife, Anne, a couple of weeks ago.
You're so lucky.
A couple of weeks ago for our Vegetarian Society Thanksgiving dinner. And the two of them just glowed with positive energy, and it was really refreshing to see that, instead of the outrage that sometimes we see as activists. But in your book, you say that we need to frame our message in a positive manner, that negative messages aren't very compelling.
Messages succeed best when we start positive, because then our audience is nodding their head saying, yeah, you're speaking my language.
Mm-hmm.
I can buy into this. And then we can talk about what's getting in the way of things happening the way that's optimal. And I describe this in length in the book, Move the Message, and how anyone can do this, how they can structure, how they can design a message that way in the chapter on Design It.
Mm-hmm.
But I also want to address this idea of the anger is, a lot of times, Greg, activists say we can't be angry or we cannot be emotional. That's so hard for us to do because when we're talking about animal advocacy, we have billions of reasons to be truly outraged. So what I would ask activists to consider is a different possibility, which is that when you're speaking to others, don't be afraid of your emotion. I'd say you definitely want to frame a logical argument. You want to be logical and you want to be reasonable, and that's the substance of what you say. But also recognize you may be moving the same message 10 times, but it's not until the 10th time that it really hits you about what you're saying, and suddenly you realize you're tearing up a little bit, or you realize that the rage that you're feeling is something that's really hard to control.
Uh-huh.
And I'd like to give another option, which is to, in that moment, you can pause and say, the injustices here are so great that it's near impossible to feel the weight of them. But what we're talking about are the facts. And this way you can bring it back. So it's a way of channeling that passion so that it's very human and it's productive rather than antagonistic.
I think it's very important that we rechannel that anger into something more productive. But I agree with you. It's certainly human to feel it and to work through it. It's very frustrating to be moving the message and seeing how little change is coming. Sometimes I get very pessimistic. But then when I think about it, I've been vegetarian for 34 years and only active for the last couple of decades. And I've seen so much change for the better in that time, but we sure have a long way to go.
It's true, but change can happen exponentially. So you know that things are moving much, much more quickly than they were 30 years ago.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
We can have more progress in the past year than we did in the previous 10 years.
Hmm.
So we also need to recognize we are like the swan in that we can be graceful in moving forward, but the real action is what's happening underneath the water, how fervently she is paddling away.
Yeah.
And we don't see that. We are not privy to all the conversations and all the ways in which the world is awakening and reconsidering that the way that the world has been is no longer a way that we can continue, and that there's innovation and that there's creativity that's sparked that we may not see the results of that for a couple of years, but there can be inventions that can change the world in such profound ways that can save billions of animals from their suffering. So we have to trust. We do the best that we can and that the change is happening. And in ways of managing that frustration, we come across frustration because we believe that there is an obstacle. But if we can shift to the trust that things are moving and that resistance is a natural part of change,
mm-hmm.
You know, no change is so small that someone isn't threatened by it.
Yeah.
So we have to recognize that when there's resistance, that means that it's very likely that a great change is happening at the other end of that.
You mentioned in the beginning about PETA. I have a similar story in that I think the first moment I became an animal advocate was seeing a picture from PETA of a domestic cat trapped in a leg hole trap. Pictures say 1,000 words, I've been told. What do you think the impact of visual aids can be, and how should they best be used? I've seen some really bad PowerPoint presentations. When a person just reads what's projected on the screen, nothing could be more boring. So let's talk for a minute about using visuals and videos and pictures.
We have to recognize that what we have to show the public is really hard to take. It's very hard to take. So if I can answer that question in terms of a way in which more than presentations, because Move the Message, the book, goes into a lot of detail about that, is we have this wonderful channel of communication, social media.
Wow.
And so we have the capacity on Facebook or on LinkedIn to post video, and we have, with so much gratitude, the strength, the conviction, and the courage of those undercover investigators who are exposing very, very hard-to-see footage. So one way in which we can use that is to post video using social networks, such as Facebook or LinkedIn, or we can tweet the link to that video, and be very clear on the action that we want our friends and our colleagues and our audience to take. So it's not just watch the video, because we have to recognize a lot of people won't click on that link because they already know that the video is so hard to take. It's going to hurt.
Uh-huh.
But instead to say, click the link below, you'll see some undercover footage, but more importantly, there's an quick, easy email you can send to make a huge difference.
Right.
So if you keep it very action-oriented on what you want people to do, as a result of that, then you're really going to move the message forward in a way that's compelling and that will help others to want to post it to their site, you know, post it to their timeline and have others take action. You really are moving the message.
So we have to be strategic and look towards the results we want and keep that in mind, right?
Yes. It's more thinking about the actions you want people to take. And if they can't look at the footage, but they're willing to sign your petition, then that's great. If they're willing to send that email, if they're willing to try this veggie burger, how terrific is that? Do they really need to see? You know, think about what's the real action that we want them to take and to have compassion for why it's too hard for them. Think that that's the win. The point is already made. They don't want to see it. They can't put their eyes where their stomach is and to have compassion for that because we don't want to see it either. That's why we're so motivated to create change.
Obviously, a lot of people in our movement need better communication skills. I've seen some very bad speakers, and I guess they could start by reading Move the Message. Where can our listeners go to find a copy of Move the Message?
It's available on Amazon. There's hard copies, and it's also available on Kindle and Google Books. And if they want to connect with me, because I'm so committed to ensuring that everyone has their voice, with all respect and honor for those who stand up and speak out, I work with those who have yet to be heard as well, is I would love to collaborate with anyone who wants to really make a difference by using their voice. So you can reach me at Joe, that's J-O, at movethemessage.com. Or you can visit my website, movethemessage.com.
We've been speaking with Josephine Bellacomo, author of the book, Move the Message, Your Guide to Making a Difference and Changing the World. I really appreciate your time today, Joe, and I hope to see you someday soon.
Thanks so much, Greg.
If you'd like to listen to some of the past shows of ACT Radio, you can find them by going to ktep.org, clicking the Listen button, and going to the Audio Archives, or finding the page for ACT Radio. And if you'd like to learn more about a plant-based diet, please visit the Vegetarian Society of El Paso at vsep.org. And join us for our Vegetarian Society Christmas party, which will be on December the 9th at 5:30 p.m. at the Opus World Bistro in Colony Cove on Mesa Street. Go to vsep.org for reservation information. Until next time, I'm Greg Lawson. For the Earth, the animals, and a healthier humanity, thanks for listening to ACT Radio.